Welcome to episode 34 of the Fredcast for the week of September 18th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, final results from the Tour of Spain, Pro Tour standings, the Worlds are coming, what would a Fredcast be without doping news, and the bait bike program is working. Following the news, an Interbike preview, tragedy strikes charity rides, some listener mail on the Tour of Britain and cycling maps, plus shoutouts, upcoming rides, and of course, PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Thanks for joining us once again. I'm happy to say I'm actually at home this week, and it feels kind of good. Hey, before we get started with the news, just want to mention a couple of things that we've talked about on recent Fredcasts, and that is the two new shows that I'm doing, the two podcasts. The first is the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast, and you can find that at www.the-spokesman.com. And that's the show that I do with a lot of other cycling podcasters where we get together and we talk about whatever topics are going on in the world of cycling. We do that every 2 weeks. We'll be releasing the next show momentarily, so look for that. And of course, you can subscribe in iTunes, and there is a link on the webpage as well as in the show notes so that you can go ahead and check that out. It's a great show. We seem to be getting a lot of really great feedback to it, and I hope you'll listen to it. And for those of you that are in Southern California and who might be interested, I'm doing another show. This one's sort of pro bono. Of course, they all are pro bono. But anyway, this one's the official MS-150 podcast. And this is for the Land Rover Miramar MS-150 Beta Bay Bike Tour, which is taking place October 7th through 8th. And you can find that podcast, of course, on iTunes and the link in the show notes and on the website, but also at MS150BetaBay.com. So enough plugging my other shows. Let's get right into the news. First of all, before we get into the news, I want to clarify something from one of my top stories last week. And you'll recall that last week we were talking about Frankie Andreu coming forward and admitting to the fact that he was using EPO back in 1999 when he was working with Lance Armstrong as well as with the U.S. Postal Service team. And I want to read to you exactly what I wrote on the website a few days ago after I got an email from a listener. This is really important. It says, I received an email today from listener John, who wanted to point out that I made a mistake in my reporting of the facts of the Frankie Andreu EPO story in show number 33. John pointed out that I incorrectly stated that Frankie and another teammate on the 99 U.S. Postal Service team used EPO, quote, several times during the race, meaning the Tour de France. I want to be clear about this. That is not correct, and I really regret and I very much apologize for the misstatement. The correct statement is that Frankie has admitted to using EPO leading up to the race. So I want you all to know that this was not intentional. It was just a misstatement. Pure and simple. And I'm bringing it up at the beginning of the show today because it's that important to me. I want you to know that I'm honest in my reporting. I want you to know that I try to be as accurate as possible. I try to do as much research as possible. Sometimes we all make mistakes. And this time it was just a misstatement. I just used the wrong words in reporting the story. So I hope you forgive me. I do apologize. I regret the fact that it was an error, but I'm certainly big enough to admit it. So there you go. Let's get on with the news, shall we? Okay, so the 2006 Vuelta a España is now in the history books. Now, when we last met, Alexander Vinokourov from Astana, the Kazakh rider, was in the lead after stage 17, with Alejandro Valverde in second place 9 seconds back, and in third place, Carlos Sastre at 1:51 back. Now, Vino stretched his lead slightly to 53 seconds over Valverde, with a second-place victory in stage 18, coming in just behind fellow Astana rider Andrei Kazechkin. The 153-kilometer stage 18 saw Vino attack just 6 kilometers from the finish line at the summit of La Pandera. Kazechkin went with Vino, and he ended up winning the stage. And third place went to José Ángel Gómez Marchante, 30 seconds behind both Kazakh riders. There were no changes in the top portion of the general classification after Friday's 205-kilometer stage 19, but It did mark the first stage victory in a major tour for Spain's José Luis Arieta of AG2R, with Dmitry Fofonov of Crédit Agricole coming in just behind the Spaniard, and David Loossi of Switzerland in third, just 2 seconds back. Now, the final real test of this year's Vuelta came on Saturday with the 27.5-kilometer individual time trial. This was the third individual time trial of this year's race. And as if to put the final touches on his victory and to give himself a present on what was his 33rd birthday, the time trial 20th stage was won by none other than Astana's Alexander Vinokourov, who posted a time of 33 minutes, 39 seconds, and that was 6 seconds better than the second-place finisher, Samuel Sanchez, and 19 seconds better than third-place finisher, Alejandro Valverde. So you can see, Valverde and Vinokourov were really battling this one out throughout the entire race and even up to the end. At the end of Saturday's racing, however, Vino had extended his lead to 1 minute 12 over Valverde and 3:12 over Andrei Kazechkin, who was now in third place in the overall general classification. Sunday was the final stage of the race, a 142-kilometer event starting and ending in Madrid. The stage itself was won by Eric Zabel, but the man of the hour was Alexander Vinokourov, who maintained his 1 minute 12 advantage over Alejandro Valverde to win the 2006 Vuelta a España, with third place going to Vino's Astana teammate, Andrei Kazechkin. After the race, Vinokourov was quoted as saying, quote, "This is my revenge for when my team couldn't start in the Tour de France. My first week was not good here, but I gradually got stronger and stronger. It's the first major stage race win in my career, and it's going to motivate me even more to go back and win the Tour next year. Now, I'll take part in the World Championships road race, and that takes place on September 24th, and see if I can win there too." So as far as the other jerseys go, Tor Husoft won the points jersey, and Igoi Martinez, the King of the Mountains. This is, as you know, the last Grand Tour of the 2006 season. We're getting very close to the end of the Pro Tour season. And as of right now, here are the Pro Tour standings. In the individual standings, Alejandro Valverde is actually leading in first place. He has 285 points. In second place is Australia's Cadel Evans with 162 points. Third, Andrei Kazechkin, who took third in the Vuelta at 156 points. And closely behind him, Alessandro Bayon in fourth place with 155 points. For the teams, Team CSC is leading with 333 points. Second place, Cas d'Epargner, Iles Baleares, 325 points. And third, Rabobank with 308 points. So there are really just three Pro Tour events left in this season. On October 1st, there's the Zürich Metzgete in Switzerland. On October the 8th is Paris-Tours, and that's in France. And on October the 14th, the Giro di Lombardia in Italy. Now, the next major race period is the UCI Road Worlds, and those are taking place this week. Actually, they're starting, well, the events themselves surrounding the Worlds are starting today, but the real races, the time trial and the road race, will be this weekend. So it takes place from September 19th through the 24th, and I've put links in the show notes to every one of these races, all the Pro Tour events that I just mentioned, as well as to the UCI World Championships. When we come back next week, although next week's going to be sort of a special week on the Fredcast, and there won't be that much news, and I'll tell you why a little bit later, I will be giving you the results of the Worlds, because I think that that's a very important event and something that definitely should be covered, even while I'm off covering other events that are going to be going on in the world of cycling. So for what it's worth, guess who showed up at the Vuelta at the finish on Sunday? None other than Floyd Landis. He showed up to watch Vino win and to say goodbye to his former Phonak teammates. Floyd did, of course, have a few words for the press when he was questioned once again about the doping allegations. And as we discussed on last week's Fredcast, Floyd was once again talking about the problems he's asserting with the French lab that tested his Tour de France urine samples. Now, according to Floyd, quote, "The Tour's doping tests are full of irregularities. I'm innocent, and I think my lawyers are going to be able to prove it, though they've had lots of difficulties gathering information." Now, as we discussed last week, and we also talked about this a little bit on the Spokesman podcast, Landis's lawyer sent a letter to the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, or the USADA, asking that the doping charges be dismissed. Now, we did talk about this on last week's Fredcast, and you'll remember that there were, according to Floyd and his lawyers, some irregularities in the way that the samples were handled, the way that they were marked, the chain of custody, and a lot of other issues. And another issue that was brought up, and something that Floyd has brought up, is that perhaps there was an agenda, maybe even an anti-American agenda, going on at the French lab and in French society in general. And we talked about this again on the Spokesman podcast this week, so I urge you to listen to it once I post it up online. But I also was taken to task by some of the listeners who felt that I really didn't give this the credence that a lot of people do give it. A lot of people really believe that there is a real anti-American bias in France. I have to tell you, I've been there a number of times, and that I think that their society really is just like any other society. There are people who are anti-American and people who are pro-American, and it depends on who you meet. Do I think that there are a lot of people in French society who are upset that Americans have been dominating, quote-unquote, their race for the last 8 years? Absolutely. But again, my comment last week when I said my jury is still out, I was talking solely about this anti-American bias and whether or not that created an atmosphere in which a laboratory was willing to stake its reputation on mishandled and falsified test results. On that, my jury's still out. Now, at the same time, just as Dick Pound, the chairman of WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, thinks that the laboratory in Los Angeles should be investigated based on the negative result in Marion Jones' B sample after a positive result in her A sample, I also believe that this French lab should be thoroughly investigated, as I said last week, and their procedures should see the light of day, and we should know whether or not they're actually following all of the procedures that the UCI and WADA and all of the other governing bodies have set forward. And if they haven't, as I said last week, they shouldn't be involved in sports until they can clean up their act. So that's the situation. That's my opinion. I'd be glad to hear yours. And meanwhile, speaking of doping, there are two more stories this week about cyclists and their doping troubles, and this time specifically related to the Operación Puerto scandal that erupted out of Spain. The first rider is Tyler Hamilton. Now, this isn't a name that we've been talking about a lot in regards to professional cycling, and that's because Tyler's suspension from professional cycling is due to end this Friday, September 22nd. But according to a statement issued by USA Cycling, they've received information from the UCI about Tyler's alleged involvement with the Puerto scandal and, quote, a request to move forward with disciplinary action. Now, the statement doesn't indicate the level of Tyler's alleged involvement, but apparently there's evidence out there that seems to suggest that he allegedly spent more than 30,000 euros on a doping program. Tyler has denied working with Eufemiano Fuentes, the doctor who is at the center of the entire doping scandal coming out of Spain. But the authorities in Spain say that they have found several documents that seem to indicate that Tyler could have been one of Fuentes' best clients. Now, in the statement, it says, quote, we received a communication from the UCI today containing the Operación Puerto dossier for Mr. Tyler Hamilton and a request to open disciplinary proceedings against him. As required by our anti-doping regulations, we have forwarded the complete dossier to the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency and have asked them to adjudicate this case on our behalf. So it could be a lot more trouble for Tyler. We'll see what happens. The USADA seems to be one of those agencies that tends to keep mum and neutral until they've had a chance to fully investigate. So it may be a while before we hear more about this, but as soon as we do, I will let you know. And along the same lines, it looks like the Spanish authorities and the UCI have been fairly busy in passing out evidence to various cycling bodies around the world. German prosecutors are now alleging that Jan Ulrich has used banned substances since 2003. And according to a report that I read, quote, these are not conclusions we have come to ourselves. They are supported by reports from Spanish police. So we've talked about this, that Jan is being investigated by German prosecutors as well as by Swiss cycling authorities, and that his home was recently raided while he was out on his honeymoon. So now they're alleging, based on information that they've received from Spanish authorities, that he's been doping since 2003. This is really a very wide-ranging scandal, and we'll see where it goes, but it does not look like Ulrich is going to be back to cycling anytime real soon, as long as these allegations keep coming out. On a related front, there was a decision that came out today, as a matter of fact, from the World Anti-Doping Agency's annual meetings over the weekend in Montreal, Canada. There's been some talk in the media about the fact that athletes in a variety of disciplines use what are called artificially induced hypoxic conditions. In other words, things like sleeping in altitude tents to help increase their performance, and whether or not this is akin to doping. And at the WADA's meeting over the weekend, quote, the executive committee approved the recommendation of WADA's scientific committees not to add artificially induced hypoxic conditions to the 2000 list of banned substances. Now, Dick Pound was asked about this, and he said, quote, the overwhelming consensus of our health, medical, and research committees was that at this time, it was not appropriate to ban altitude simulation. Apparently, according to all of the medical people, all of the medical ethicists, apparently using artificially induced hypoxic conditions is not akin to doping. This is good news for companies like Colorado Altitude Training, which is the largest manufacturer of altitude simulation equipment. When the CEO, Larry Cutt, of Colorado Altitude Training was asked about this and whether he thought that this was going to be good for sales, you can guess what he said, but I'll tell you anyway. He said, quote, sure, WADA's discussion has shown how effective our altitude systems are. They're safe, and they're as legal as any other training method. It's less expensive than spending time at real altitude. So the point here is this. WADA is going to say that if you want to sleep in an altitude tent because you don't want to spend the time, the money, the effort to go to real altitude to gain the physiological effects, the positive physiological effects of actually being at altitude, then it's okay to use machinery like this in order to artificially induce hypoxic conditions. On the other hand, what you cannot do is use blood doping, things that we've talked about here before, where you take the blood of somebody who has now spent time at altitude and then infuse it into the body of somebody who has not spent time at altitude. One of those medically is ethical and is not akin to doping, and the other is doping and is a punishable offense. So no matter what you've heard in the media about these altitude tents, these artificially induced hypoxic conditions, the word from WADA, the world community, is that they are legal and that they are allowed and they will not be on the list of banned substances. And finally, here's a good news story for cyclists, especially in Victoria, British Columbia, up in Canada. About 6 months ago, and I'm pretty sure we talked about this on the Fredcast, Victoria Police launched what they called the, quote, bait bike program. And the point of the program was that they were going to plant specially equipped bikes on the streets of the city, and the bikes were going to have onboard GPS systems to track and catch bicycle thieves. Now, according to police, most of the bike thefts in Victoria are caused by drug addicts. These are people who want to be able to steal a bike, sell it, get the money in order to get a quick fix. The bait bike program was modeled after another program that they have in the entire province of British Columbia that they call the bait car program. And in this case, in the bait car program, they rig cars with cameras and scanners, and I think GPSs as well, in order to catch car thieves in the act. In the case of the bait bike program, the police say that the results are 84 fewer stolen bikes between March 1st and August 31st when compared to the same time period back in 2005. Now, in some areas, bike thefts actually did increase in some parts of town, but in other areas, in fact, in most areas, the bike thefts decreased. And that was good news for the program and good news for the police. And they're very excited about this and they're going to expand it. They're also finding that the entire program and the publicity that it's received has shown consumers that they need to be a little bit more careful with their bikes. And consumers seem to be going out and buying more U-locks and more sturdy bicycle locks and taking just a little bit more care with their bikes. So that's a lot of really good news for the citizens of Victoria in British Columbia. And hopefully other cities will do the same thing and follow suit. And we will see fewer bike thefts all over the world. And that's going to do it for the news for the Fredcast for the week of September 18th, 2006. Okay, so I told you that next week is going to be sort of a special week here on the Fredcast and that I was going to have very little news for you. But don't look at that as such a bad thing. Of course, I'm going to be bringing you the news from the UCI Pro Road World Championships, which are taking place in Salzburg, Austria. But there's another major event that's taking place in the bicycle community next week that I want to talk to you about. Next week is the 25th anniversary of the Interbike Trade Show. Now, perhaps you haven't heard of Interbike, but Interbike is one of the world's most important trade shows for the bicycle industry. This is where all of the manufacturers of everything involved in cycling, from kids' bikes to BMX bikes to mountain bikes, road bikes, aftermarket components, retail products for stores, everything from cash registers and point of sale systems, anything that you can imagine that you might see in your independent bicycle dealership is what is shown at Interbike. Now, Interbike is a trade-only show as compared to a lot of the shows that take place in Europe, like for instance, the Eurobike show, which just took place in Friedrichshafen, Germany. At that show, the first few days are trade only, only for the manufacturers and the distributors, the retailers and the media. And then the last day or two, they allow the general public in. And of course, there's also another show in Milan, and that's also coupled with a motorcycle show. It's absolutely huge. And again, on the last few days, they allowed the general public in. It becomes a madhouse. Unfortunately, with Interbike, it's only for the trade. But this is the great thing about podcasting. I now have media credentials. So I'm going to be spending the week at Interbike. Now, the first 2 days, Monday and Tuesday of next week, are what Interbike calls their outdoor demo days. And that's a chance for anyone who has credentials to go to the show, to go out to Boulder City, Nevada, not far from Lake Mead, and they get a chance to ride all of the latest bikes, all of the latest components. There's a road track, there's a mountain bike track, and it is 2 days of as much bike riding as you can get in and as much testing of products as you can get in. And I'm going to take you along with me as I go to the outdoor demo. So I'm going to be bringing, of course, you know, I'm going to be wearing a jersey and shorts, and I'm going to have my mountain bike shoes and my road shoes, and I'm going to have my mountain pedals and my road pedals. And I'm going to go out and I'm going to test all of this stuff, and I'm going to report to you right from the outdoor demo, where I will interview people who are there. I'll talk to manufacturers about their new products, and I'll give you my impressions of the products that I'm testing. The next couple of days after that, I'll be on the show floor at the Sands Convention Center there in Las Vegas, and I already have appointments set up where I'm going to go around and I'm going to look at new products that I think a lot of you Freds are going to be interested in. I'm going to get a chance to try some of those products and interview the people who invented them, who make them, and who market them. And every day of the show, for 4 days straight, I'm going to be producing a new podcast. So expect a podcast Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week. So make sure that you've set your podcatcher so that you get every show that comes out so you don't miss any of my reports from this year's Interbike Expo. Now, Interbike actually is the 2 days of outdoor demo and 3 days of trade show. I'm going to be missing the third day of the show because on Friday, I'm coming back into Los Angeles to go to Ontario, California, where I'll be attending the Portable Media and Podcast Expo. And that's the expo for everybody involved in podcasting. So if any of you listeners are also planning on going to the Portable Media Expo, send me an email, let me know, or look for me out on the show floor or in any of the conferences. Of course, I've already got my badge and it does say my name and it says the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. I'd love to meet any of you. And of course, if any of you listeners are going to be at Interbike and you see me walking around at the outdoor demo, I've got a Fredcast t-shirt, the same one that you can buy on my Cafe Press store. So just go to the website to check that out. And on the days of the show, I'll be wearing that same Cafe Press polo shirt at the show. And I'll be carrying around my recorder and a microphone and a camera, because the other thing that I'm going to be doing besides podcasting from the show floor is I'm also going to be taking pictures of some of the newest products that I see and some products that I think that you'll find interesting. And I will be posting those on thefredcast.com. So next week, look for a lot of updates on the website, both in the blog page and on the gallery page where the photos are. And also look for a podcast Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, where I'll be bringing you interviews and product features right from Interbike. I think it's going to be a really exciting week, not just for me because I'm there, but also for you because I'm virtually going to bring all of you with me onto the show floor. I'm very excited about this. And if there's a product that you'd like me to look at or something that you'd like me to feature, shoot me an email, thefredcast@gmail.com, and let me know. I will do my best to see everything that you want to see and to bring it to you right here on the Fredcast. Look for it next week. Now, on a sadder note, a lot of us who are Freds, and of course I know a lot of you that listen to the Fredcast, like to take part in organized bike rides. And a lot of us like to take part in charity bike rides. And you know very well, we've been talking about it the last few weeks, that one of the things that I do every year that's very near and dear to my heart is the MS-150 bike tour here in Southern California, the Land Rover MS-150 Beta Bay bike tour. Well, there are over 100 MS-150s all around North America, and there were two that took place this last weekend, one in Oklahoma and one in South Carolina. And in each of these bike tours, there were, unfortunately, at both of them, 15-year-old cyclists, both of them who were taking part in the one in Oklahoma and in South Carolina, and they were killed out there on the course as a result of an accident with a motorist. And I bring it up only because I think that it points out something that we all need to keep in mind. I can tell you from experience that everyone involved with charity bike tours, whether it's an MS-150 or a ride for cancer or diabetes or AIDS, their primary concern and the one thing that they spend the most time focusing on is safety out on the route, making sure that the route itself is one that has virtually no risk, that there are enough volunteers on the route, that there's enough law enforcement on the route and volunteers on bikes and SAG vehicles and motorcycles and as many safeguards as possible, road marshals, people standing by the side of the road, to make sure that all of us, when we take part in these rides, are as safe as possible. But there's one thing that we all need to keep in mind, and that is that no matter how much planning goes into one of these rides, accidents can still occur. Motorists can do something unpredictable. Weather conditions can change. And just simply mistakes happen and accidents happen. And it requires all of us, even though we see those police officers out there directing traffic, and even though we see the SAG vehicle and the road marshals directing traffic and trying to keep us safe, it is in all of our best interest not only to use common sense and follow general good safe cycling practices, but also to look out for our other cyclists, our fellow cyclists out there on the road. We've got to look out for each other. So this is a very, very sad story that in both cases, they were 15-year-old kids who were killed. And my heart, my thoughts, my prayers go out to those families, the people that were there, the people who organized the event, as well as the motorists that were involved, because of course, nobody leaves the house in their car in the morning and expects that they're going to be involved in a tragedy like this. But I hope that if something comes out of it, it's something positive. And it's that we're all just a little bit more careful out there, that we all use a little bit more common sense, and that we look out for each other on these rides. Because the point of these rides is to have fun, to raise money for an important cause. And it therefore is important that we all just look out for each other. So keep that in mind when you're out there on these organized rides, whether they're for charity or not, and be as safe as you can when you're on your bike. Okay, a couple pieces of listener mail tonight. The first one comes to us from listener Jonathan in the UK, and he writes, I'm a couple of weeks behind on the Fredcast and only just listened to the podcast where you gave out the Tour of Britain results and raised some of the concerns that the media over here got very excited about for a couple of days. I work for one of the tour sponsors and had the great pleasure of starting stage 4 from my hometown and raised the question of exactly what happened with the organizers. First up, I should say that there's very little history of what are called, quote, mass start races in the UK, and I think it's fair to say that on stage 5, this was shown up by the police, who were responsible for taking the riders the wrong way because, in the words of the organizer I spoke to, quote, they thought they could do our job better than us. I think the organizers got undue criticism for that particular episode, and hopefully the Kent Constabulary will have learned their lessons for next year's Tour de France stage. I should explain that by saying there's no history of mass start races in the UK, what I mean is that when the rest of Europe opened up its roads to the peloton, British police would only allow time trialing. It took until after World War II for mass start races to be allowed on UK roads, and that meant that road racing has always been looked on as a bit odd by most people, although the old milk races and Kellogg's tours when I was a kid were pretty popular. The Tour of Britain, in its current incarnation, has only been around for 3 years, and I think it's fair to say that it's tolerated rather than wholeheartedly welcome. Secondly, there's the question of cars getting in amongst the peloton. The reason for this was that the Tour of Britain was using rolling roadblocks rather than closing roads for the duration of the race. It's never ideal to do this, and there are always going to be drivers who ignore the motorcyclists blocking the road and will be determined to get where they want to go immediately. I thought that was only Americans, by the way, rather than wait for the race to go past. Although, to their credit, many drivers got out of their vehicles and were taking pictures next to the Freds. It's also worth pointing out that the roads for the Tour de France will be completely closed, and so this shouldn't be an issue. Lastly, the motorcycle crash on the final stage on the Mall seems at this point to have been the result of driver error on behalf of one of the motorcyclists, who decided to turn even though there was another motorcycle next to him. It looks like it was an accident, pure and simple. I know I sound like a bit of an apologist, but it was fantastic to see pro cyclists back on the roads of Britain in numbers and with some of the world's top squads represented. It went some way toward restoring my faith in the sport after, well, you know what, especially as my wife and I picked this year to visit the Tour de France for the first time, and Floyd was, quote, our champion. I'd also like to say that the riders were incredibly friendly, and were willing to have their photo taken with this particular Fred and to sign as many autographs as they were asked for. Well, thanks, John, for sending that letter. I really appreciated it. It really gives another perspective on all of the news stories we all heard. You know, I think we've all learned we have to take news stories with a grain of salt, so it's always good to hear the other side. And this, John's letter really makes it sound like perhaps, as can be expected, some of the stories were a little bit blown out of proportion. I hope that's true, because with the Tour de France starting in England in 2007, it really would be nice to have a lot of the cyclists and the fans feeling a lot more comfortable about what's to come when the Tour de France does hit the shores of Britain next year. So thanks again, John, for the letter. Very much appreciated. Okay, the next letter is kind of short and sweet. It comes to us from listener Brian, and he says, I've been listening to the show now since May and have really enjoyed it. To follow up on your request in episode 32, I thought I would pass along this information concerning cycling maps in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation provides maps for each of the 52 counties in Wisconsin, showing which roads are best for cycling, as well as showing traditional bike and recreation trails. The DOT also has a list of bike maps as well, although this collection of maps can be hit or miss in terms of quality. So Brian writes that from Waukesha, Wisconsin. He even gave me the phonetics of how to say Waukesha, which I knew, Brian, but thank you anyway. And of course, I've put links in the show notes to the county maps and to the local maps. I checked them out online, and they are pretty good on whole. So thanks again for sending that, Brian. And the rest of you listeners, if your state or your county or your province or wherever you live, if there are some really great cycling maps that you think other Freds would benefit from knowing about, please email me at thefredcast@gmail.com. I would very much like to know about it so that we can send that same info out to other Freds who are either in your area or who will be visiting your area real soon. Okay, so this week's spotlighted upcoming ride comes to us from listener Jim, who wrote me an email to tell me about it, and I'm glad he did. I had never heard of this event, and it sounds like a really great one. This one is called the Sunflower Revolution 3, and it takes place October 13th through the 15th in Cincinnati, Ohio. So what's the Sunflower Revolution? Well, according to what I read, it is a, quote, celebratory three-day event whose mission is to promote wellness within the Cincinnati area's Parkinson's disease community, to raise funds for Parkinson's research that can benefit patients regionally, nationally, and globally, and to heighten the public's awareness of Parkinson's disease. For me personally, I'm glad to hear that there are events like this for Parkinson's. My grandmother had Parkinson's, and I know what it can do to somebody. I mean, just look at Muhammad Ali and look at where he was and where he is today, and that's as a result of Parkinson's disease. This event is a shared project of the Davis Finney Foundation, as well as the Neuroscience Institute at the University of Cincinnati and University Hospital. All proceeds from the event directly benefit the Davis Finney Foundation and will be invested in Parkinson's research programs at the Neuroscience Institute. Since 2004, the event has raised $225,000 for laboratory research, clinical trials for patients with Parkinson's disease, and fellowship opportunities for young physicians training to become Parkinson's specialists. So here's how this event works. On the 13th, there will be a gala dinner that will be raising money for Parkinson's. On the 14th, there will be a symposium and expo. And then on the 15th is the bike ride. There are routes of 25 and 62 miles, or in other words, a metric century. And they're going to take you through scenic Warren County, Ohio, and the communities of Miamiville, South Lebanon, Oregonia, Morrow, and O'Bannonville. The entry fee is $80. It includes a t-shirt and lunch, and there's also a commemorative jersey available for $80. I've got a link in the show notes to the Sunflower Revolution website. Sounds like a really great event, and if you participate, let me know. Love to hear your experiences in participating in what sounds like a really great ride. Just a couple of shout-outs for you tonight. The first one goes out to listener Steve. Steve's wife is Kristen from the Manic Mommies podcast, and Kristen and Aaron were talking about Steve the other day and the fact that he did a century 2 weeks ago, and the fact that while he was doing the century, Kristen was out of town, and when he came back, they weren't quite sure he was going to do a good job taking care of the kids. I'm here to report that he did a darn good job. As a matter of fact, Kristen on the Manic Mommies commended him for what a great job he did, even though he did a century. So congratulations to Steve for that, and also on his new bike. He's got a brand new bike, which is just amazing. He sent me a picture. It looks really cool. So just a shout out to Steve to say hi, and congratulations on all of that. And also a shout out to listener Jim, who just finished his first century and said that the Fredcast guide to completing your first century, which is one in some of the first few shows of the Fredcast, was very helpful to him. So congratulations to listener Jim, sending a shout out to him. And just like last week, we have one more shout out, and this is a guest shout out. This is my wife, Donna, again, who wants to send a shout out to a couple of really special Fredcast listeners. Donna?
Thanks, David. I wanted to send a shout out to listeners David, Michael, and Jonathan, and thank them for their support of the MS-150. Your listeners are amazing, and their support is really appreciated. If you still want to donate, it's not too late. Just go to the website and click on the Donate Now. Thank you again, everybody. Enjoy the ride.
Thanks, Donna, and thanks to everybody who donated. It's really, really appreciated. That's going to do it for the show tonight. Next week is going to be a really special couple of shows. So stay tuned, stay subscribed. And in the meantime, vote for us. Go to Podcast Alley. Click on the link in the show notes or click on the link in the website. Also, I hope you'll continue to spread the word. Tell your friends, tell your cycling buddies, tell the bicycle shop where you work or that you patronize about the Fredcast. Always trying to build the listenership, and I count on you for that. Of course, if you want to discuss anything we've talked about on the show, all of the Fredcast listeners are at the Fredcast forums, and there's a link in the show notes. Of course, you can also go to our Frapper map. I haven't mentioned that in a while. Great way to see where all the Fredcast listeners are around the world. Now, not every single Fredcast listener is listed there, but it is always fun to go there and see where the Fredcast listeners are. If you'd like to communicate with me, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. You can send me an email or an audio comment to thefredcast@gmail.com. You can also use our voicemail line at 206-203-FRED, or you can send an audio comment via Odeo, and there is a link on the left-hand side of the website at www.fredcast.com, and don't lose that URL because next week, that's where you're going to be finding all the updates, all the photos, as I go around Interbike and bring you with me. So that's going to do it for the show tonight. Tonight's PodSafe Cycling music comes to us, as always, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's song is called Throw Me a Line, and it's by Kevin Reeves, and there are links in the show notes to Kevin's website, as well as to his site on PodShow. So until next week, until Interbike, enjoy the music, but most of all, as Donna said, enjoy the ride.
Kiss and embracing.